The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily radio show, or the Trumpet Daily, as we're now trying to call it, to be more precise. You can get to the live stream, of course, at thetrumpet.com website. That's thetrumpet.com/live. And you can also email the program at td@kpcg.fm. I told you we'd have a little bit of the bird cam footage. It's actually not a camera set up on the feeder like what we have in Edstone, but this is me from my iPad over the last few days capturing some images of, as you see there, a woodpecker going to town on the suet, and then there's the big bird hotel with all kinds of sparrows and other birds that visit it regularly. There you see the snowstorm in the background. Beautiful, beautiful setting over the last few days. I think that was from Sunday. So, yeah, we've got trays all over the place. A cardinal there enjoying some seed. And then there's a feeder that one of our viewers sent to me. You can see TD at the top of it if you look closely. So that's just a little sampling of some of the many birds that are visiting the feeders, even during the snowy conditions that we've had in recent days. On today's program, we're going to be getting into, I think, following on a study that I did last week. I think it was Friday's program where we talked about one of the most inspiring chapters in the Bible, the book of Ephesians, Ephesians chapter 1. And today in the study, we'll talk about the family plan, Plan B, as my father discusses in the God Family Vision book. So we'll come to that in just a bit. But first, the news segment. Andrew Cuomo, the Emmy Award-winning governor from the state of New York, he came out with, I guess you could say, an apology, or should we say a fake apology? It was the best that he could put forward after just a withering storm of criticism because of his administration and their lies. Their disinformation campaign over the past year, it's now been fully exposed. And here he comes out yesterday and says, well, I do have to apologize for not giving enough information. He didn't say I apologize for lying. He didn't say I apologize for all of these deaths that I'm responsible for. Instead, it was one of those non-apology apologies. Instead, it was still putting the blame on the nursing homes. He said, yeah, actually, it wasn't these nursing home or these sick patients that spread the sickness to others. It was the staff. It was the staff at these nursing homes. It was their fault, in other words. Certainly not mine. Here's the governor of New York just yesterday, clip one.
Apologize. Look, I have said repeatedly, we made a mistake in creating the void. We made a mistake in creating the void. When we didn't provide information, it allowed press, people, cynics, politicians to fill the void. When you don't correct disinformation, you allow it to continue. And we created the void, not because people weren't working hard, Mike, because you know how hard people were working. You should have prioritized providing more information. Yes. Yes. In retrospect, we should have prioritized providing more information.
Right. More information. That would have solved everything. In fact, he was lying. He was giving false information. He wasn't telling the truth. And his aide has since admitted we didn't tell the truth because we knew it would be held against us politically. We knew that it would benefit Donald Trump. She's admitted to this. And then there he is. The buck stops with him. He's the governor. And there he is saying, well, there was a void. There was a void, and because of that, you know, here come the cynics. Here come the critics. He at one point, even talked about conspiracy theories. As if this is all some giant, you know, Republican or conservative conspiracy theory. The left-wing media, the propaganda media. You know, if you think even about the tone, he said there, he was talking, I guess, to a journalist named Mike. And notice just how quiet it is. Think about this press conference. Had it been Donald Trump sending all of these sick patients into nursing homes and 15,000 patients die because of it, you think about how that press conference yesterday would have played out. As it was, I mean, you see the tone there. He's talking very slowly and deliberately. It's very quiet in the background. Remember some of those press conferences with Donald Trump where they just shouted him down if he didn't answer it the way they were expecting or wanted? Or if he left just a little bit early, they would scream at him. They would literally scream at him or his press aide, his spokespeople. They would scream. But not with this governor. Not even after the scandal now has been revealed. Still, you've got to treat him with a lot of respect and honor. He's the governor of New York. He went on to say this, clip two.
We should have done a better job in providing information. We should have done a better job of knocking down the disinformation. You'd never knock down all these conspiracy theories, the political conspiracy theories, because they generate 10 a day.
So there he is bringing up the conspiracy theories. As I said to you yesterday, there's a lot of Democrats in the state legislature that are angry with this governor. One, this Democrat, Jessica Ramos, she said yesterday, trash. No one believes you. That was her take on the press conference that you're hearing there. No one believes you. You heard what the mayor of New York City said yesterday. I played that clip for you. And so here is the governor finally coming forward and issuing this non-apology apology. Another clip from yesterday, clip three.
But we should have done a better job of providing as much information as we could, as quickly as we could. And we should have done a better job on that. Yes. And no excuses. I accept responsibility for that. I am in charge. I take responsibility. We should have provided more information faster.
And here again, it wasn't the information and how it was coming out slowly. It was wrong. It was false information. He was saying one thing when in fact another thing was happening. That's the truth that we now know. This last clip that we have, here he is again shifting the blame over to the nursing homes, clip four.
COVID did not get into the nursing homes by people coming from hospitals. COVID got into the nursing homes by staff walking into the nursing home.
So it's the nursing home staff. We certainly can't say it was me sending in those sick patients. Keep in mind, we'll play some clips later from Governor DeSantis and his take and what he did, the approach that he took. Keep in mind that in New York, you had the Javits Center and then you had that Navy vessel. You had all of these empty beds for sick patients. And he wouldn't use it. The governor of New York wouldn't use those beds. Instead, he sent the sick patients back to the nursing homes. That's what he did. And now he's apologizing yesterday for not giving more information faster. I just want to play for you. I told you about the Emmy. He won an Emmy Award. I mean, this is perfect. You can't make this up. He's perfect for TV because he gives a perfect performance. He reads from a left-wing script, and he does it with eloquence. And so he wins an award. And I forget when the award presentation was, but this little montage made the rounds yesterday on the internet. This is a group of celebrities congratulating the governor of New York for the leadership that he provided during the COVID-19 crisis. Clip 5.
Thank you for believing in me and giving me support. Good Lord knows I needed it. And don't worry, I'm not going anywhere.
It is now my distinct pleasure to present the 2020 International Emmy Founders Award to Governor Andrew Cuomo, with a little help from some of my fellow New Yorkers.
To my governor, the governor of Empire State, Andrew Cuomo.
Congratulations, Andrew, on your much-deserved Founders Award.
Governor Andrew Cuomo, you are the man. What?
I was trying to think of something that I could say to you that would be funny, and so I called your brother Chris, who could not understand why you were getting an Emmy since he's the one on television.
In the darkest stage of the pandemic, your daily briefings live from New York gave us hope, gave us clarity, gave us the truth, and gave us something that we were not getting from Washington: leadership.
In the midst of this storm, Andrew Cuomo became the nation's governor. People across the country tuned in to his press conferences every day.
Daily, I was watching his press conferences, informing us, telling us what to do.
You did your thing during COVID. New York was suffering. We were the epicenter. We were all in a crisis, in a panic. And every single day, you came on the airwaves and you offered your strength, your leadership, and your direction, and your caring, and your heart.
You are the epitome of New York tough.
And you set the example for the rest of the nation, the rest of the world, how to be a leader during a time of crisis.
Thank you for your leadership during these trying times. We are New York tough, smart, disciplined, united, and loving.
Thank you, Governor.
The epitome of New York tough. How tough it was for him to send sick patients into the elderly care centers. How easy is it? Here he's saying he did the right thing. He told the truth. And all these celebrities talking about hope and clarity and leadership and how that he told the truth, and they weren't doing it in Washington, D.C., certainly not from the White House. And now I wonder what all of those New York celebrities are saying or thinking now, if they're even following up on the story. As I said to you yesterday, even when the record gets corrected, like the so-called January 6th insurrection, there's still millions of people. I saw a tweet yesterday talking about the 5 people that were killed. This is just from some ordinary American. That's what he assumes. That's what he was told. And even when the record is corrected, people still don't get to the truth. How easy is it? You heard all those celebrities. How easy is it for people to just follow after the mob? Oh, the mob is following after Andrew Cuomo. Andrew Cuomo is the truth teller. And so we've got to follow him, or we've got to follow Fauci. Whatever Fauci says, or whatever the CDC says about masks, we just follow along. And they pay lip service to the science, to the facts. But look at the facts in New York. Look at the bottom line now. Look at the casualties. We've been told so many lies all along the way. So much fake news. A leader, the up-and-coming presidential candidate from New York, and through it all, the crisis, I mean, he was telling one big lie after another, covering it up. Covering up the truth. Truth fails, just like Isaiah said. I had this story the other day, by the way, on the vaccine. Speaking of truth, speaking of facts that are going to be covered up, this is from a website called The Defender. It talks about 653 deaths, plus 12,000 other injuries reported following COVID vaccine. This is according to the latest CDC data. So it's sort of like the New York Times when it quietly corrects the record. The CDC, I mean, I guess it's the Center for Disease Control. So I guess they've got to report this, but you can be sure it's not going to be reported widely in the propaganda media. You can be sure of that. 653 deaths as a result of the vaccine. The vaccine caused the death. Most of these deaths are in the United States of America. 602 of them come from the United States. The average age of those who die, 77, and the youngest was a 23-year-old. A 23-year-old American dying because he took the COVID-19 vaccine. Remember back at the start of the pandemic when we were told, look, if this lockdown, if it saves even one life, it's worth it. It's worth it. Well, what about that argument now? What about that 23-year-old? What about the 653 deaths brought on by the vaccine? Not going to be hearing that in the propaganda media. It says here, according to the latest data, 602 of the 653 reported deaths were in the U.S., and 137 of the deaths were related to cardiac disorder. 53% of those who died were male, 44% female. The remaining death reports did not include the gender of the deceased. It says the average age of those, well, I gave you that, 77, and the youngest one being 23. It's pretty sad. The truth, not just about COVID-19, the truth about, as Mr. Armstrong said, man's solution, quote unquote, is to fight the poison or to fight the disease by putting the poison in your body. By putting the disease in your body. He says, he explains in the healing book, that the way to get rid of disease is to remove it from the body. To remove it, in some cases, by miraculous help from God. Divine healing, of course. But then we've got to certainly do our part to keep the body healthy enough to prevent disease, to prevent it from happening. In the first place, Richard's given me some updated statistics on the UK and how that the number of cases, it's just plummeting over there. And in the news a few weeks ago, remember it was the new variant, and then we have to have another crackdown, another lockdown because of it. They have to be tested automatically if they're going to even fly into the UK. It's just crazy. Well, the numbers now are plummeting. And you've got the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, who's saying, look, we're not going to unlock things until it's just really, really low. I mean, he's still taking that. Even if it saves one life, it's worth it. So let's keep it locked down. And the economy in the UK, as we heard here over the weekend, it's just been devastated because of this lockdown. And here's a leader who continues with that same mentality. We've got to just, even if it saves one, it's worth it. Well, how about getting people off the vaccines? If that saves one life, let's do it. Let's do it. Imperial College, they've come forward. You know the Imperial College of London? The one that came out with all the models last year saying millions were going to die. Millions were going to die in the U.S. 600,000-700,000. Are going to die in the UK, I think it was. They've come out with new models. And what do you suppose these ones say? It's going to get worse. There's more disease and death that's coming. Be prepared. Stay locked down. Well, I mean, you ordinary peons, you stay locked down. But the elites, I mean, we'll carry on. We'll carry on with our life. And we'll certainly be getting our paychecks. We'll be getting our paychecks in full. Lord Sumption, he had another great piece about liberal democracy will be the biggest casualty of this pandemic. That's what he wrote. He said this, many people believe that it's okay to be like China for a time because when the crisis ends, we can go back to being like Britain again. Well, look, it's just temporary. Remember last year, it was just 15 days. 15 days to stop the spread, and then we'll go right back to being, you know, normal Britain or normal United States. He says, these people are making a serious mistake. We cannot switch in and out of totalitarianism at will because a free society is a question of attitude. It is dead once the attitude changes. See, he makes a strong point. The attitude is changing. These elites, they are drunk on power and control. And you think they're going to let go of it? You think they're going to ease up on it? Well, it's refreshing when you do hear from a leader that takes a very different approach, like the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis. He's lifted the lockdown. He did not send sick patients into elderly care centers, and there's a lot of them in Florida. That's a big-time retirement mecca. A lot of elderly people moved to Florida because of the warmer weather. And you would think, because of that, that they'd be leading the way in deaths, I mean. But no, it's New York. Listen to the governor of Florida and just contrast this with Governor Andrew Cuomo, clip 6.
We in Florida, we had the exact opposite order. We said, you can't, a hospital, send a COVID positive nursing home resident back into the nursing home because that is the most vulnerable population. And you obviously would put them in serious risk. But what we also did after the first few weeks, we established COVID only nursing units. So if you had somebody test positive at a nursing home, they could be safely transferred and isolated, recover, then go back so that the other residents were protected. So we really viewed that as the tip of the sphere when you're dealing with COVID, because the fact of the matter is, it's not killing a lot of 18-year-olds. It is tending to kill people who are very elderly and very, very ill.
And so he set out to protect the elderly, and he did a good job of it, and he should be praised in the propaganda media. They're not going to do it, though, because he's a Republican. They hate him. I mean, they should be going to Governor DeSantis saying, how did you do it? How did you know? He explains, by the way, that was on Tucker Carlson last night, but he explains why so many states, so many governors made tragic mistakes, horrific mistakes in the beginning. This is the governor of Florida explaining how that happened. Clip 7.
Around mid to late March, we were all given models saying you're not going to have any hospital beds in 5 days. Every governor got those models. Questioned the assumptions under those models. I didn't think that they were valid. And I said, I'm not going to construct our policy around that. But even if I was wrong, I would build more beds somewhere rather than throw these elderly people back into the fire of a nursing home where they could contaminate and infect a lot of other people. So it was just an important judgment that we were all called upon to make. And I think Florida did it right. And I think obviously other states took a different tact.
Other states like New York, he said that the model said, look, all of your hospitals you're going to run out of beds. So you've got to free up beds. And that's what Governor Cuomo did. He freed up beds in the hospital. He had all the extra beds in the Navy vessel and the Javits Center. He had thousands of beds. And don't even get me started on the respirators. He had tens of thousands of those. It was like he was stockpiling beds and respirators and then sending sickies back to the elderly centers. That was the approach. That was the strategy. And as DeSantis said, we took a different approach. And per capita, it's something like they're 34th out of 50 states, Florida. And everything's open. Schools are open. Businesses are open. They're open for business in Florida. He went on to say that, you know, when I drive around Florida, I see a lot of New York license plates. They're coming into Florida from New York. I don't think there's a lot of Floridians that are leaving Florida for New York, though. And he's right. He's right about that. That's, again, a refreshing contrast to the governor of New York, who, when it's finally exposed, the evil, the fraud, the lies, he still can't even apologize. He still can't. So, and the media, they've been somewhat hard on him in a few places, like Jake Tapper, and I think even the New York Times has criticized him, but it's not nearly as hard as it should be, the correction, I mean. And that's because he's a good Democrat. That's because he won an Emmy Award. So much fakeness in the world of news and leadership. Today, yesterday, you might have, speaking of leadership, you might have seen some of the footage of President Trump. He was, I guess, out golfing in Florida, and he came back to Mar-a-Lago, and they had this huge turnout. Look at these pictures, these people lining the streets just to be able to say hello to the real president. And Right Side Broadcasting showed this, and I think at its peak, it had over 800,000 viewers. It's up over a million now, those that have come along later to watch the video. 800,000 to just see President Trump returning from the golf course on President's Day. They came out, I'm sure, on that day just to honor him, the one that they see as the real president. Meanwhile, you've got the fake president, Joe Biden. He gave a short President's Day address, I think just for a couple of minutes. I can play a little bit of a clip from that. Here's what he had to say yesterday. Fake President Biden, clip 10.
Today, we're living through another long, dark winter in our nation's history, combating a deadly virus, joblessness, hunger, racial injustice, violent extremism, hopelessness, and despair. But I know we'll get through this. I know better days are ahead. I know it because I know the story of the history of the journey of this nation. The American people have never, ever, ever let this country down, given half a chance. So on this President's Day, I promise you, as your president, my whole soul is in the work ahead of us.
That's Joe Biden from yesterday. It made me think of the speech that Jimmy Carter gave back in the 70s, where he just talked about, it was a depressing speech. And Ronald Reagan came by a few years later and said, hey, let's get back to work. We can turn this around. Here he is yesterday, the fake president, talking about all the hopelessness that's set in, and we're going to try to turn this around. But, I mean, even the music's kind of depressing. But more than that, Gateway Pundit says 900,000 and counting watch Trump parade on President's Day. 47,000 watch Joe Biden's speech on President's Day. And of course, don't even get started on the likes versus dislikes. It's like 62-1 in favor of likes on President Trump's feed. And then you get to the fake president. Hardly anybody even watched it. Leave aside the dislikes. Hardly anybody is paying attention. What does that tell you about what most Americans know and believe in their heart of hearts? They know the truth. They know what's happened here. They've seen the fraud. They know it's been exposed. And all of the people who win the Emmys are pretending that they have the truth. They're pretending that their narrative, that their story is absolutely grounded in fact. They know themselves. They know themselves that they got away with this steal, the steal of the century, the steal of American history. It's being exposed, though, so much of this fraud, as I said to you yesterday. But in the upside-down world that we're in, I don't have time to play the clip from Eric Swalwell, but you might have heard at the top of the hour the news about a 9/11-style commission. The impeachment didn't work, so didn't I tell you that once he's innocent or declared innocent, the impeachment is over. They're not going to stop. So now they've got to have this 9/11 style commission to come in, and you have Eric Swalwell, who literally was in bed with a Chinese spy, and he's the one calling for a special investigation. As I say, you cannot make this up. This is Emmy Award-winning material. If ever there was Emmy Award-winning material, this is it. You're seeing one fantastic performance right after another. When we come back, we'll launch into our study on Plan B, the God Family Plan. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily. One may blind his eyes to existing facts and trends and say the world cannot get any worse than it already is. Or, if we just ignore the conditions and don't worry, perhaps they'll go away. But these conditions and trends won't just go away. Not unless they are caused to go away. The scriptures of the Holy Bible, the inspired revelation of the Supreme God, have foretold today's world conditions and trends, and give us the advanced news of coming peace on earth, of universal prosperity, of happiness and joy, of veritable utopia. This is the good news of the world tomorrow, and it is absolutely sure. This coming world is vividly described in our booklet, The Wonderful World Tomorrow, What It Will Be Like. Bible prophecy explains in detail how God will intervene to save mankind from destroying himself. Jesus Christ will return to earth, putting an end to the rule of man and restore God's government on earth. To learn much more about this prophesied utopia, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
In the God Family Vision book by my father, he's writing about the passage, the first few verses in John, the Gospel of John, John 1. And he says here, where is the beginning of the Bible narrative? It is not, as most would suppose, the first verse of the Bible. So it's not Genesis 1. I mean, John 1 takes us back even before the recreation of this earth or the surface of this earth. It says here in John 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So you had God and the Word, the one who, as verse 14 brings out, the one who became Jesus Christ. These two beings together. Now, in the God Family Vision book, my father talks about how that, you know, John was so close to Jesus Christ that he really had an additional or more depth, you could say, to this God Family Vision. Jesus gave it to him as his friend. Verse 2, it says, and the same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. So the whole universe, the entire universe made, Ephesians 3 and verse 9 says God did it through Jesus Christ. So in the God Family Vision book, my father says, okay, here in John, the Gospel of John, he takes it back, the author does, to even before the angels were created. It says here in the book, why does John go back even before the angel plan? Probably because of what happened to Lucifer and one third of the angels. That plan, we could call it Plan A, had failed. Lucifer, whose name literally means light bringer, brought light. But then something tragic happened. He lost this light. God and the Word had lived together for all eternity in unity and love. And the angels, it says, after the angels were created, Lucifer and one third of the angels rebelled, it says. And for the first time ever in the universe, there was rebellion, disunity, and lack of love. He says, finally, God didn't inspire John to talk about that rebellion in John 1 and verse 1 because God now had another plan, a better plan, Plan B. Now, it involved more risk, the Word coming in the flesh and sacrificing all, risking all, so that God could have a family plan, Plan B. In the God Family Vision, it says, the angels who were sent to beautify the earth, who should have then qualified to do the same to the entire universe, failed. So God had to enact another plan. He had a plan B, just in case something like this would happen. Plan B was actually a family plan. It says God had decided if he couldn't get the angels to do that job, that he would recreate himself in man and make a family a family plan. Now, this is the plan, this is the family that you and I can be part of, that you and I can be born into. Our calling, and most people just can't believe this, they can't wrap their minds around it, but our calling is actually on a plane far higher than what God ever intended for the angels, for Lucifer. And the book of Hebrews, let's just look at that. Hebrews brings this out, Hebrews chapter 1. And of course, Hebrews 2, the second chapter, talks about the universe, the incredible human potential, and how that we're to be given jurisdiction over the universe. I don't think I'll have as much time to go through Hebrews 2. But notice verse 1 of chapter 1. It says, God, who at sundry times and in diverse manners spoke in time past unto the fathers by the prophets, it says, has in these last days spoken unto us by his Son, whom he has appointed heir of all things, by whom also he made the worlds. So just like we read in John 1, or as I mentioned over in Ephesians 3 in verse 9, the entire universe, God brought it all into existence, it says in verse 3, who being the brightness of his glory, this is speaking of the Son, Jesus Christ, and the express image of his person and upholding all things by the word of his power, when he had by himself purged our sins, sat down, it says, on the right hand of the majesty on high. See, Christ, he came to this earth and he just wanted to carry out the Father's will. He was it uses the word there, express image, or phrase, express image. He was like an exact replica of the Father. He was God in the flesh. He came and lived a perfect and sinless life. He had to be that perfect sacrifice to qualify to replace Satan on the throne of this earth. Notice verse 4, it says, being made so much better than the angels, as he has by inheritance obtained a more excellent name than they. So much better than the angels, on a higher plane. It says here in Mystery of the Ages, so the angel potential was to take over the entire universe, to improve and finish the billions of physical planets surrounding the uncountable stars, many of which are suns. See, but like my father said in the God Family Vision, they failed to realize this purpose or potential. Now, there's certainly millions and millions of righteous angels, and they're discussed in this very chapter as well, Hebrews 1, and they're assisting God in this family plan. They're certainly assisting us, those of us in God's church, and they're ministering servants, it says in verse 14. They're holy and righteous. They're excited about this family plan as they see it unfolding. You can see that in Ephesians 1, and I believe it's 2 Peter 1. They're peering into this purpose, this plan, as it unfolds. But God is now offering to us, through family, to rule the universe, to create for God, to beautify, to maintain. So much better, it says in verse 4, being made so much better than the angels. Verse 5, it says, for unto which of the angels said he at any time, you are my son, this day have I begotten you. And again, I will be to him a father, and he shall be to me a son. He never offered the angels this incredible potential through a family plan. Now they are, as it says in the Psalms, they are called sons, they're created sons, but they were never intended to be born sons of God. That's what God is offering to us, to be born into the family of God. And here we see human reproduction, and we see marriage, which was instituted and ordained in Genesis 2. God is a family. And we have, even in the physical realm, we have all of these reminders around us daily. Human reproduction, marriage, family, children. And yet man cannot grasp this truth. It's too wonderful, too magnificent for man to wrap his mind around this. And of course, the devil is largely to blame for that. He's the god of this world. And as it says in 2 Corinthians 4, he's blinded this world to the true gospel. Blinded to the truth. Jesus came into this world as a light to this world, but men loved darkness. They love it. They don't want the truth. They prefer to live in ignorance. Now, there's lots and lots of religions in this world today. There's lots of people, billions, or at least over a billion, who claim to be Christian. But what do they do? As Mr. Armstrong explains in the very first chapter of Mystery of the Ages, what do? When they talk about God's purpose or when they discuss who and what God is, they limit God to a trinity, God the Father, Christ the Son, and then they make the power of God, the Holy Spirit, they make that into a personage. And then it shuts out family altogether. That's not the plain truth of the Bible. That's not the teaching of the Bible. Far from it. Hebrews 2 and verse 5, notice this. It says, "For unto the angels has he not put in subjection the world to come," that's the world tomorrow, whereof we speak. He's not put this under the direction of the angelic realm. So read on. Verse 6 says, "But one in a certain place testified, saying, What is man that you are mindful of him? Or the Son of Man, that you visit him." So why are we here? David asked in the Psalms. Why are we here? What is our purpose? Verse 7, it says, "You made him," man that is, "a little lower than the angels. You crowned him with glory and honor, and did set him over the works of your hands." If you look at that phrase, "a little lower," it means for a little while lower than the angels. As we certainly are while in this fleshly frame of ours. But it's only for a short time. It's only for a little while. It says in verse 8, "You have put all things in subjection under his feet," man's feet. "For in that he put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. But now we see not yet all things put under him." See, we're not yet there, but we will be. Soon we're going to be given jurisdiction over the entire universe. This is Plan B. Herbert Armstrong, he said this in The Missing Dimension in Sex. He said, "Now consider angels. The skeptic doesn't believe it, but the Bible reveals that angels do exist. Angels are on a higher level than men. It is written that man was made a little lower than the angels, that is, during this mortal, fleshly human life now. It says, yet angels, on a higher plane than physical man, do not marry." That's in Matthew 22 and verse 30. They don't marry. "Each angel was individually and separately created, not born. Among angels, there is no marriage, no home life, no family life, and no sex." There's none of this. That's because God's not reproducing himself through the angelic realm. He's doing it through human beings. Human beings made in the image and the likeness of God. Genesis 1:26. Human beings with the incredible human potential to be born again into the family of God. That's the truth of your Bible. What a magnificent and wonderful truth. And yet people are offended by this message. They think it's blasphemy to talk about God reproducing himself, to talk about God building a family. This is one of the first doctrines that the Laodiceans wanted to change. They wanted to move over to the Trinitarian camp back in the late 80s and the early 90s. So as soon as Herbert Armstrong dies, I mean, they wanted to get rid of this truth. And they did. They did. They despised the truth. Verse 9, it says, just back up to the end of verse 8, it says, "But now we see not yet all things put under him." So we're not yet there. But then verse 9 continues, "But we see Jesus." So we do see this. We see Jesus, who is made a little lower than the angels, or for a little while. So you see the similarities. The same language when God talks about Christ and what he went through and how he left a trail for us to follow, following his steps. It says, who was made a little lower, or for a little while lower than the angels, for the suffering of death, crowned, it says, with glory and honor, that he, by the grace of God, should taste death for every man. So we do see this, as it says here. And then verse 10, for it became him, for whom are all things, and by whom are all things, in bringing many sons, plural, you see, many sons unto glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through sufferings. Now, you think about what Paul wrote. He wrote Hebrews, of course, but he wrote in Romans 8 and verse 17, he says, and if children, then heirs, heirs of God, and joint heirs with Christ, if so be that we suffer with him, that we may be also glorified together. So Christ, he came, he was the pioneer, as these verses in Hebrews brings out, or the captain of our salvation. And we can follow in his steps, we can follow in his example, and he can lead us right into the family of God. Notice what it says over in Romans. I've mentioned to you Romans 8, heirs together, as it says there, but notice what it says about Jesus Christ. In Romans 1, this is verse 3, it says, concerning his son, Jesus Christ, our Lord, which was made of the seed of David according to the flesh. Keep in mind, John 1, the word, he came in the flesh. He became the son of God. So he came in the flesh. And then Romans 1 and verse 4 says, and declared to be the son of God with power according to the spirit of holiness by the resurrection from the dead. He came in the flesh as a begotten Son of God, and then, as Romans 1:4 says, by a resurrection from the dead, he became the literal born Son of God. God is a family, and we are heirs together with Christ. That is the truth of the Bible. Heirs together. God, for a little while, we're lower than the angels, but soon, God's going to give us jurisdiction over the vastness of the entire universe as his family goes out and fulfills his purpose and continues to expand and grow, as you see families do in the physical realm, on a much, much smaller level. But what a wonderful reminder we have daily that God is a family. Plan B, the God family plan. We'll take a short break and then finish today's show with a little bit of feedback. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Is marriage on the way out? Is the institution of the home, with its family life, to disappear from society? How and when did the institution of marriage originate? Does it, after all, serve any necessary purpose? Why Marriage, Soon Obsolete, takes an in-depth look at the institutions of marriage, the home and family life, and reveals a startling, even shocking truth, which has been altogether overlooked by science, by religion, by education, and by society. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
We have time just for a few comments. I've got to leave just a couple minutes early for a forum across campus. But it says here, one viewer, just wanted to drop you a line to express my gratitude for your daily program and all the other work that you do on our behalf. It says, your Trumpet Daily show is the highlight of my day and helps me stay focused on the big picture, that Christ will soon return and make it right. It says, I pray every day that you will continue this great program and not be silenced as so many others have been in this evil world. I have just started your Bible correspondence course and have much to make up for in my past. Stumbling across your show was no accident. God led me to you, and I thank him for it daily. Please continue your great, important work. I, along with many others in the world, need you and the truth spoken on your program. So that's a very encouraging bit of feedback from someone that stumbled onto the program. It says here, as a Canadian subscriber to The Trumpet, I regret to say that we're following close behind America. As America goes down the tube, so do we. Your article needs to be reaching, this is in response to a Trumpet brief from last week, your article needs to be reaching millions instead of just the few who subscribe to The Trumpet. Let us pray that God intervenes to turn things around to his glory. Another one here says, I love the show. Start every weekday with it. Thanks for giving me some truth in this world. Another one writes, this is by far my favorite morning show. All other morning media lets me down. I appreciate your truth in relations to today and pertaining to the times upon which we live. Another one here says, listening to The Trumpet Daily first thing in the morning is one of the highlights of my day. I can hardly wait to hear it tomorrow. Great show. And then one last one here says, many thanks for your powerful trumpet call about violence that occurs now against the children by corrupted politicians and big money individuals. And finally, another one says, thank you for the Bible study and have a great day and keep up the positive reporting. So that's just a sampling of some of the comments that we get in on a regular basis. You can send us feedback to td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.